Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy with another week of American Tennis. And it has been very, very interesting what's going on in the college ranks this last few weeks. And also it continues in the USTA ranks and around the country with a few civil wars. I call these little mini civil wars because I actually believe that they are quite healthy what's going on, because for the first time people really are stepping up and being heard. And I don't know whether the internet has done this for us or whatever. People just have more information. But any time and every time people try to get stuff done behind closed doors, there is an upcoming, and it's very, very interesting how this happens. And I say this to remind you that the mission of American Tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out. And as we always quote Edmund Burke as the most important, I think, quote that we could learn in America as we stand up for our freedoms, is that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to say nothing, or good men to be silent, good people to be silent. We need you to stand up and to speak out. All that we ask is you stay professional, address issues always, never people. If you can stay professional, address issues and not people, no man, no woman can find fault in that. And then they will have to come to the table with their own issues and how they want to talk about them. We are the UR Tennis Network. UR Tennis, that's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10 and S, Network. And we're on every week, but also there's a show on every day of the week about noontime on the UR Tennis Network. And some of them have just done fantastic. I always enjoy Bruce Lipka's show that comes on Thursday. It's really, really good. Bruce says the way it is. Lisa Stone, Jason Hainstone with college tennis coaches every week. Tune into the UR Tennis Network and find out what's going on in our tennis world. If you want to be a guest on the show today or ask some questions, call area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853, and we will allow you to talk to our guest today. This is Chuck Creasy. My website is chuckcreasy.net, and you can go to the blog part of that and see some of the writings that I've had on different issues. But every one of the radio shows, every one of the UR Tennis Network shows that I've had over the past 2 years are on that site, chuckcreasy.net. T3mentorship.com is where you can get some of my videos. I'm very, very proud. We have another book out, another book I was able to help in, a book called Where the Tigers Play, and this is a 120-year history of Clemson University athletics. You can go to Barnes & Noble's, and you can also go to Amazon and click on their Amazon.com and find out Where the Tigers Play if you're a Clemson fan. But I love being in Charleston at the Citadel, where I am right now, and it's a fantastic, fantastic institution. Very proud of the things that are being taught here. Basically, a no shortcut approach to life and to teaching. And I bring this up because I wanted to introduce our guest at this time. I believe Jim is on the line. Jim, do we have you there? Are you on?
Coach Creasy, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Jim, I really, really appreciate you coming on the line. And folks, we have Mr. Jim McCready, and we're continuing our series on the dumbing down of our American toughness, or basically the emasculation of the American male in many ways, because what I see going on with our boys and how so many opportunities have been cut out from under them. It's never been a better time for our young ladies, Jim, in America, as they have more scholarship money out there and more opportunities to play. And I've always referred to Title IX as a very, very good law that was very poorly implemented, the way it has squeezed out many, many of the men. And the other thing I wanted to say is that Title IX was never set up to be a situation that squeezed the men out, nor was it set up in a situation to protect women from other countries before it protected our own daughters here in the United States. So we had actually, Jim, we had a great program on Title IX back in March. We had the man who enforced it all around the country. But, Jim, I want to give you a background here in a second, but I wanted to sort of set the table here, because what I see happening all over our country is not very inspiring, as we've had more and more opportunities for our youngsters, but we see less and less to be inspired about. And I went out to Oklahoma, folks, this week, and I went out to some meetings, college coaches meetings, and as I said, we have a civil war going on. In that the USTA and the NCAA, some officials have stepped up and sort of put down the gauntlet with an experimental format that very few people like, because it's singles only for the team matches. The doubles are non-existent, and this has upset a lot of coaches. Then the ITA, the Coaches Association, Jim, have come back, and they put in their own system, and without a doubt, every coach and player that I've talked to, players absolutely think it's ridiculous. Jim, it's a one ad system. They're trying to keep it shortened, and most of the coaches in the meeting the other night were just outraged that the ITA would come up with something that is not even a rule of tennis. But here's the point, Jim. Go ahead.
The one ad is a sudden death kind of point.
It's a sudden death thing. We did no ad scoring for a while back in the 80s and early 90s, and it really was found to be a crippler of the developmental skills you need for the game in being able to group 3 points in a row. So they've come back with this something nobody's ever heard of. But here's my point that I wanted to make as we set the table for your show today, Jim, is that the two things that the coaches came out with in a meeting the other night is they're two unique philosophies. One is for an education philosophy. The other is for an entertainment philosophy. And these two philosophies, I thought there was no way in the world that these coaches sitting in the room would be predominantly for entertainment over education, because that's just the way we came up, Jim. I mean, you're pretty close to where I am in age, and we came up education, but there are so many coaches that they're into the entertainment. They're trying to get an entertainment buzz out of this. But this parallels what happened about a month ago when I was up at the USTA national conferences and meetings. There is a big push for participation over performance. Everybody wants to be somebody in the game. And, Jim, I brought you on the show today because you've been in the coaching industry, in the tennis industry, in the racket sports industry, in the management of club industries, and in directing and being a leader for other coaches for over 30 years now. And you have seen just about every element of this. And I guess the first we've got to go to commercial here in a second, but I want to ask you, am I seeing this right? I mean, do we have a problem with motivation with our kids and with what's going on here? I just see a complete dumb down, Jim. What do you think?
Well, sports is growing so big in the last 15 years, and it's become such a televised sport, and that, you know, everybody is doing so many things out there that, you know, the motivation of kids is really driven by, you know, what's hot on the TV, what's hot with their peers, and you know, there's so many things out there. I don't think you have the question wrong. And Chuck, with your career, you should be asking this question, certainly, is where is the motivation to, you know, get American tennis back where it should be? You know, there are a lot of great programs, a lot of great schools, and a lot of great things going on out there. And I think, you know, it may just be a cyclical thing. I'm not sure you've got anything wrong, because you've got your finger on the heartbeat of what's going on here. But there certainly is a change in the last 15, 20, 30 years about how, you know, sports are being taught, whether it's, you know, trophies for participation versus trophies for excellence. You know, that's kind of where we've headed, and I'm not sure it's a good thing either.
Yeah, I mean, it really is not. We would investigate all these things, folks. I mean, again, it's another in the series. I had a great man on a few weeks back, Bobby Verdun, and he had some great insights. But we would investigate this further. We need your input and insights, too. Folks, if you want to call and add something, but I think it's everywhere right now. We'll be right back in a minute. This American Tennis with Chuck Creasy.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Says you may.
make them in America, but we're not doing such a good job anymore, folks. And I was thinking, not just have we not won any Grand Slams recently, I was trying to think back to a match that was on TV in tennis that really, really inspired me that an American has won since, really, John Isner's win at Wimbledon in '78 or whatever it was in the fifth set. But, folks, we have Jim McCready on the line, and for over 30 years, Jim's been in the tennis industry as a teacher, director of other coaches, a leader in the tennis industry. He belongs just about every organization he is. He's seen the politics of the game. He's seen the club level of the game. He's seen the coaching level of the game, the competitive level of the game. And, you know, experience says a lot. And what I'm just so, so much in admiration of, Jim, is how many facets of the game that you have touched. And how many children over the years that you have taught, and how many families you've seen come and go, and how many careers that shoulda, coulda, woulda been that didn't take off. And Jim, I mean, I guess the question is, yeah, but.
You know, really a question, where does that motivation come from? You know, you're talking about what age, what environment. I mean, I was in the country club environment for years, and, you know, the motivation really is more of a grassroots kind of customer service. You've got to know the parents. You have to know the particular child. You know, you've got a day here where a kid comes in, and he's in tears one day as an 8-year-old, and 2 weeks later, he's your best buddy, you know. So there's a lot of that. You know, how do you prevent the computer age and all the internet impersonalization of that internet, which is an important part of, you know, growing any, you know, major sport like tennis. But, you know, there's a frontline country club, typical USPTA pro doing his work, and the real secret there is how do you get these kids to love the sport, as you and I did maybe when we were growing up back in the, you know, 60s, and trying to get, you know, into something that was, you know, worthwhile. It has life skills, and there are all kinds of things that, you know, we learn on the court, and the parents need to learn about that and be able to convey that not only on the court and at the club or during a lesson when the child gets a little unruly, but at home as well, and be sure that the honesty and dealing with disappointment and the individuality of tennis and, you know, taking responsibility and, you know, observing what others are, how others act on the tennis court. All those things are so important to ingraining the sport into, you know, our individual psyche.
Jim, talk about a little bit about how you grew up in old. Now, wait a minute. Old school is not old fashioned. We got to put that disclaimer out there first. But talk about the old dogs and old school learning. How'd you come up? Where'd you come up? How'd you get into sports tennis? I mean, what was the, you know, what was the whole process?
Well, the motivation there, obviously, you know, way back in the day, as we hear, there weren't as many people in the pool. There were your typical basic sports. You went through and you got good at something and you kept at it because there was satisfaction there. There was something that you could, you know, hang your sort of your pride on a little bit. And that's still a factor today. It's an important factor of any self-confidence and getting the feel that you can, you know, achieve something on your own. Basically, I grew up in the New England area and just played indoors, outdoors, and got into teaching early on and just loved it, and just continued to, you know, sort of convey the internal, you know, clock of tennis is you've got, you know, 6-8 years to really do something with your game from the age of whatever it is, 10 to 18, and really see whether you can, you know, get the excellence that, you know, tennis requires of you. And back then there was, you know, more of a, you know, if you were good at something, you accelerated maybe a little quicker. The pool wasn't quite as big. There weren't as many countries out there that were, you know, supplying, you know, the many athletes that we see on the world stage today. So it was definitely a simple time, Chuck.
Did your parents get you into sports, or it was just, you know, grabbing a ball and hitting the back door?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what was back then. You know, it was the beginning of the sports craze, really. I mean, Wide World of Sports was just getting on the air, and there was an intrigue about it. There was a freshness about it. Today, you know, the freshness is in the newest video game or the newest sports, you know, whether it's the board games, the board sports with the surfing and the skateboarding and everything. It's there are definitely more varieties of sports out there than there were when I was growing up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we did. We grabbed a ball and a bat and hit the back door, and Mom said, "Be home at 6 for dinner, or I'll strangle you." And you basically just ran the neighborhood. You went to the park and you did pickup stuff. Is that pretty much you too?
Yeah, and then you got to be, you know, prominent. You got into the schooling, scholastic sports, and, you know, varsity this, varsity that. And TV was really not covering a lot of sports. I mean, now it's everywhere. You get it on your iPhone. You know, you get it anywhere you want, anytime, and it's become a lifestyle. And a lot of these, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, are doing it because they have to do it, or their buddies are doing it, or it's an expected part of their daily curriculum. You know, I think that's good to some extent, but it definitely dulls the motivation because you're just doing it because you've been told to do it.
Well, here's something that you hit on, and I want to go here a little bit. People haven't changed. Kids haven't changed. Kids still have that need for approval. Kids still have that need to be doing something. Their minds are just wide open and they're going after things. And you've said that, well, we've had so many other things, but I want to add something in here. Last night I had an experience. I went over and saw my 8-year-old son playing Little League baseball, and it's his first year playing baseball. And we're over there, and, he's playing catcher, and it's sort of fun. And my wife starts to say something. She goes, "Paul, I said, "Don't do that. Do not do that. Do not." Because then these other parents are yelling at their kids. I told her, don't ever get to the place where you interfere with the coach. Never, 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 even at this stage. But here's the other thing, Jim. We got home and she said, well, the coaches brought around a catalog and they wanted to give our kids trophies at the end of the year. Now, my son's team is doing not very well. They hadn't won a game. It's really fun. It looks like the Bad News Bears out there playing, but it's really fun to watch. But these kids are just learning how to throw and to catch and to bat and to run. And all these things are not as far along as I would say a lot of the kids of the past as far as just basic sports skills. But the point is, they haven't won a game, and they're passing around a catalog to see what trophy they're going to get the kids. And my wife is great. She goes, "No, we do not believe in participation trophies." They said, "Well, everybody gets one." She says, "No, we will not accept a trophy." So today, before I left, Jim, I had to explain it to my son about why he wasn't going to get a trophy. The other kids were, and we just were not going to allow him to have that. And she comes over. Now, he tears up a little bit. I said, "Tough it out, son." And my wife right. comes over, and she's tough, Jim. But she's going, "Now, son, let me explain." I said, no. I said, don't do this wimp stuff. Don't let him handle this. It's just part of the deal. So
we've probably all been guilty, especially in the country club circuit, of handing out trophies that weren't necessarily merited. But certainly, you know, the explanation that goes along with it is important, and your son probably couldn't have a better mentor to help him understand that. But, you know, it definitely is, you know, getting the child in a environment that teaches respect, teaches independence. You know, it gets to the point where if he likes tennis, he's going to have to step on that court by himself, and he's going to have a bad 20 minutes, a good 20 minutes, win or lose the game. You're trying to get something out of it. And, it does take a little hard edge. Tennis is hard. I think you had Brian Minton on a couple weeks back.
Right. He was a really good show.
He was saying how difficult it is to get into the top 150 in the world. And certainly that's an elite situation. But, you know, he's having trouble finding kids who want to, you know, dedicate that much enthusiasm, that much physicality, that much understanding to getting that point. And, you know, it may just be we're getting to that point. There's so many more countries, 100, you said the other day, countries participating in you know, sending kids to tournaments and everything. You know, that's got to be 10,000 kids playing tennis, and they're all pretty good.
They're all, and I agree with that. I agree with that. I guess where I'm disappointed, though, is it's the American way for us to fight through competition and come out on top. And I think we're sort of arrogant about that, but we're not doing the work. We're looking for pedigrees more than doing the work. But, okay. Jim, let me ask you, are you for coaching on the court for young kids? What are your thoughts about that? Or you think they'll just tough it out and take their wins, take their losses? There's a little bit of difference of opinion there.
You know, being old school, I certainly understand the need to be there by yourself. It's part of the sport, really, that you're out there. You know, boxers get three minutes in a round or whatever it is, and they have to be out there on their own. And tennismen has been likened to that quite a bit without the blood. And the goal is to sort of accept the framework of tennis as a one-on-one against Bob and or Sally against Betty, and they have to tough it out without any external, you know, just themselves, rely on themselves to get it done. Now, you know, in this era of perfection, maybe, you know, a little coaching here and there isn't a bad thing. I don't think it's been, you know, almost as an entertainment thing on the women's tour where you're wondering what the coach is saying to the player, almost like a shot spot kind of thing where it draws the fans in. Does that make the sport more attractive to more people? It might do that. But, you know, it's certainly a discussion point. I'm not sure whether I'm for it or against it, really.
Yeah, it really is. I've heard some different thoughts. I recently was up in a tournament in Syracuse, New York, and a parent came up to me and said, look, my 10 and under child, my 9-year-old, just went out and played a tournament, got bullied by the other kid, devastated, walked away. Here's what I think you should do. I think you ought to allow parents to be on the court. I go, wait a minute. Now, he said, let me continue. So, Jim, here's what he said, and this was really, really interesting. He said, I have found out that if I am in any situation and the parents are on the court with an 8-year-old, 7-year-old, 9-year-old, the kids are very well behaved, but the parents are extremely well behaved. They do not want their child to do anything that is not sportsmanlike. And he said, here's the reason. He said, there is a big difference when I sit in the stands and I'm distant, but when I'm on that court, I feel what my children feel. And I think it's very, very healthy. And then he went on to say, but I think very quickly the kids 10, 11, and they get strong enough after the entry levels, you know, then I think you cut them loose and let them get a school of hard knocks a little bit. But that end, he says, we're losing kids in that competitive arena right out of the blocks because the bully wins on the playground and until age 9 or 10. And it was really, really interesting. I'll tell you the story. But just real quick, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, you know, if the bully is winning, he's obviously not getting the information from mom and dad that makes him, you know, really learning about the life skills that tennis teaches. You know, you've got to be respectful of your opponent. You've got to be honest. If the ball's in, the ball's out. You know, you can't challenge the umpire to a point where, you know, it's distracting to the momentum of the match. You know, all those things are put in place for a reason. And even though it's hard for the 8-year-old, the 10-year-old to understand those things, you've got to keep trying. You have to keep having things in place that don't encourage the opposite direction of that. I think, you know, there is some rigidity there about tennis, whether it's no coaching because it's a one-on-one combatant kind of thing, or, you know, you're going to open it up and have all kinds of variables that takes it to a level that maybe isn't healthy for tennis in the long run.
Yeah, I don't know if you can control all that. When I was a kid, it used to be playground 101 was that there was a bully on every playground.
Yep.
In playground 101, next step was you got picked on by the bully and you backed down. Then the next part of that was you stuck up to the bully and learned how to be courageous, and the bully went away. This was playground 101. Now, we've taken this away from our kids. We sort of run interference for them, don't we?
Yeah, well, we definitely do. I think, you know, everything becomes so social media oriented too. If somebody gets bullied on the court, it might be in 7 different tweets before you know it.
It's really disgusting that we Big Brother's watching you. 1984, George Orwell's, has become Little Brother, isn't it? It's like people have everything on a video now, and it's like the tough things that you need to do as a coach, and the tough messages have to be done behind closed doors now with all cell phones off and things yep. like that. Boy, there's some embarrassing things out there that people have recorded, unfortunately. And the point is that it was just part of the deal. It was just part of the deal. Maybe that's why our kids are sort of becoming a little bit wimpy.
There's so much peer pressure. I mean, and peer pressure is, driven by, media attention to a topic. And tennis for a long time had a little bit, sissy background to it. And it was a tough sport for guys to get involved with back in the 30s, 40s, and it wasn't as attractive as a football or a baseball for the national pastimes. But certainly now we're seeing with this fabulous element in the last 10 years, tennis has become the premier activity, I think, in the world. There is nothing better than watching two finely tuned athletes hitting balls back and forth, and that's got to transfer down to the kids who are watching it on ESPN or whatever they're watching it, at the U.S. Open. It's definitely... tennis is as healthy as it can be, and there are an awful lot of good people out there who are doing the right things for tennis, but I'm sure you come across them. It's just it's a pity we don't have, three or four Andres and Pete up where we should be, and Serena's up there and doing a heck of a job of setting the bar, but, each game is a little different. The men's game is having different elements than the women's game.
The problem is, Jim, we're not seeing it. Where's the American, where's the next American champion going to come from? And I always bring up the statistic. I'm very, very aggravated that in college ranks in 1984, I believe it was, 39 of the top 100 players in the world were American, USA, American college graduates from the USA. 39. Now, and people will say, well, that was a different era. We didn't have 100 countries and all that. But still, we were competitive. Now we have one, John Isner. And women has been 20 years. Go ahead.
Well, the sense of cycles, I think, the USTA back in the 90s, I'm sure you remember, had an initiative that started, touting the get out and play and all those kind of things. And it was successful. It certainly grew the sport in the United States and it was healthier than it's ever been. But I think it also started a whole global, revolution. And I think there is some validity, Chuck, to the fact that there are, probably 4 or 5 times the number of top players coming out of these countries than there were 15 years ago.
Cycles, but I still don't see our kids being tough. Jim, we got a caller I'm going to go to here. Area code 931980. Are you there, caller?
Yeah, I'm here, Coach.
Okay, Coach, we've got is this. I think I know who this might be. I think this sounds like a Tennessee. Is this a Tennessee number?
This is a Tennessee number.
It is a tennis. I think this might be old Coach Ed. This is talking about a crusty warhorse of the old school. This is Coach Ed. Go ahead, Coach Ed Dixon. You've got Jim McCready on the phone here, and go ahead. What do you have today?
Okay. Well, Chuck, I know you're talking a little bit about the decline of the American tennis prospects and things like that, and I was a college coach. In fact, you started me. I was a grad assistant years and years ago, Jim, so I've known Chuck longer than most people been alive.
Lucky guy.
I certainly am. Things have certainly changed, I can't help but believe, in a way we were lucky growing up when we did. We didn't have distractions like kids do nowadays. You were at the house at 8 o'clock in the morning, didn't get home again until supper time, and just played all day, all different sports all day long. And kids aren't doing that like they used to. And I do know Chuck feels the same way. We turned into a feel-good society, I don't know how many years ago, but it's really hurt as far as kids being competitive. And I've always felt that way. Jim, how do you feel about like, you know, participation trophies and all those evils that have destroyed the competitive drive to win and earn a ribbon, not be given a ribbon?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a subtlety. There's no doubt. It's been years in the making, and certainly the, you know, that sense of computer time. I mean, we're all guilty of it. We're spending hours a day on the computer these days, and of course, we didn't have it back then. We had a baseball mitt and a tennis racket and a golf club, and we went out and you hung out, like you were saying. But
yeah.
Oh boy, you know, I don't know if there's a, you know, an easy answer anywhere, except that there are bands of good people out there who are, you know, trying to do the work necessary, Chuck included, and, you know, with his academies, and USTA's got to be doing some good things out there. You know, it does get political, and it does get, you know, to where it's almost too hard to play at this level these days. I mean, they're real exceptional athletes. I mean, look at Nadal, the way he came back after 7 or 8 months of being off and just walked over everybody. I mean, that is a talent. He's American, or what he is. We got to find those talents. But I think they're cyclical. I think they're going to come out eventually, maybe a year from now, maybe 4, 5, 6 years from now. You know, I've got to believe that there's so much talent out there that it's hard to, you know, not give kudos to all those people that have motivation, maybe a little more than us every once in a while. But I think we're going to have some players coming up.
Well, I certainly I certainly agree with the cyclical idea too of really great prospects showing up. It is such a special sport, you know, tennis, that it does take a special kind of person mentally almost more than anything. And now these kids are just physically so superior and mentally superior. Those are the ones that are really standing out. But I think, you know, a way you become mentally superior is that's not an accident. I don't think it's due to their surroundings and their upbringings. I have to believe that, that's one great thing about Coach Creasy. He trains people that way mentally long before the physical part starts, it's missing in a lot of programs, and I can remember when things started changing as far as some of the kids I was recruiting. In fact, I was at Purdue at the time, and I remember I thought he was a top recruit, and he was a tremendous player. We get to college, and he said, "Coach, I really can't work the way we're doing it here." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you send us on a court and say work on certain weaknesses. I'm always used to having a pro with me, you know, and he's helping me with my weaknesses. I really don't understand this concept." And it was just a shock to me. But, you know, that was 25 years ago when that started. And so.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Guys, we got to go to commercial. We'll be right back. American Tennis, Chuck Creasy here. We'll be right back.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis. We have on the line Jim McCready. I think Coach Dixon. Coach Dixon, are you still on the line?
Yeah, I can hang around for a little bit longer.
Okay, well, I'd just like to ask you one question here.
Sure.
I've seen a big dynamic change here in sort of the demographics of sports. I mean, our upper middle class white kids basically are pretty much locked into video games, their social life. They pedigree shop. I see parents shopping for the best schools and trying to do whatever it takes to get them into the pedigree shopping. We were just happy to go to college, or we were just happy to be on a team, and then we tried to make a winning team of where we went. What's going on here? The reason I'm asking is Jim referred a few minutes ago to where we all went and played in our school programs, and we all went and played for our teams after we got good in our neighborhoods. But the first thing they cut out are school programs, school art, school music, school. We don't even do cursive writing. Kids don't do cursive writing. You know where I'm going with this. They don't have drama. They don't have these things, all of the creative things of the heart. And, you know, do we have is this a conspiracy? That's the bold question. Coach Ed Dixon, I'd like to know your thoughts on this. Or this is the dumbing down of America. Are we doing that? Or you think it's cyclical, like Jim has said?
No, that, I don't, you know, politics, it's, who knows how controlling that is with everything we do. I don't want to know. I know, Chuck, you're not that way. You're right in the battle of all these things, and it's almost like I would be too upset if I really believed it was that far reaching and that planned. But you in fact, this summer we talked about it. You were talking about wooden rackets. That's when the game was a really creative game, and it's not that way anymore. I mean, when rackets changed and everybody could hit the ball harder, players used to be artists out there. Great tennis players used to be artists. We can all think back to like Nastasi and McEnroe and all those type players that used so many different types of shots and used all the court I think in a way now Murray somewhat uses all the court and you know, Chuck, I was encouraged really watching the U.S. Open and Wimbledon, looking at all the drop shots players are hitting nowadays. I mean, heck, without a drop shot I couldn't beat anybody, so I was thrilled to see this. You see the great players using that kind of shot. I wish they'd use more slice approaches down the middle and things like that. But it was great at least to see all these drop shots. And it's a fun shot to hit, too. But I know a lot of pros and coaches don't want kids to do that. It's, you know, they just so opposed to that. But, you know, Chuck, I hope that
you hope it's not a conspiracy.
I do. That'd be awful. I just retired, man. I don't want to live in a conspiracy-driven country. Do you?
I know, but they've done. It's been a good job of dumbing us down. Jim, what do you say?
Well, you know, I mean, talking about the wood racket. I mean, I know you've done some teaching with it. I've always bring it out to the kid who, you know, is swinging for the fences and can't figure out what he wants to do with his mental side of the game. And you know, it's quite an interesting time frame. Obviously, the art of the game, you know, is somewhat different now. And obviously with tennis being healthy, I think the art has changed from the gentle, let's hit the ball there, let's hit the ball here and move somebody around a little bit. You know, the gentleness of it was more of a gentleman's sport. Now it's really becoming a robotic, hard-producing, big-shot kind of game. And that's certainly, there's some art to that as well. Certainly, we Federer and all these top players are hitting balls that we've never seen before. So, you know, it's there, but how do we make that exciting to the 8-year-old, the 9-year-old, the 10-year-old for a long enough period of time where he won't do something else when he's 12, 13, or 14? I think that's the big difficult thing. You know, they're getting so much. I mean, we're entertained all the time on the Internet, and they're picking up ideas and blogs and websites, and you're getting motivation from things that are just more diverse. So well, let's make tennis more exciting with these great artists that we have, the Murrays, the Nadal, the Serenas, and, you know, all the beauty that tennis is these days. It's certainly healthy. I think I agree with that.
Do you think that green ball stuff is the answer? Last week we had Craig Jones on the program. What a great show. And he, you know, I really thank him for coming on because he was on the firing line there a little bit, but he's been willing to step up and answer a lot of questions. But do you think the USTA is barking up the right tree on this one?
You were talking about the softball?
The softball. Not the mandate. Not the mandate. There's no way to convince me that's a good thing. But
well, you know, the softball itself, you know, I've taught with it for years. I've always picked up a Nerf ball and brought it out and used those kind of divertive, you know, different types of balls to get stimulation for some of these good athletes at a young age. But, you know, it certainly allows players to move at a young age the way they need to move 5 years from now. But they have to start hitting regular balls with regular rackets in order to, you know, really get the feel of what's going on.
Yeah, and again, going back to Ed's thing, you know, you've heard my thing before, Ed, about the three drugs you get from playing tennis, or should have got. We got from playing when we were kids, the dopamine, the adrenaline, and the endorphins. Well, the dopamine was, because it was hard to pick up, it was hard to put down. From the first time, as I thought I was a good athlete, in trying to play tennis, I go, whoa, this is hard. Whoa, wait a minute. Here, I better get good at this. Ed, could you give a quick lesson about how you teach kids the consistency, placement, depth thing? Could you just jump in there? I don't want to take all of Jim's time when they get back to Jim, but this is very intriguing. I'd love for people to hear your theories on that. It's because we don't do that anymore. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, well, it's the way I started. I was like you. I was a pretty good athlete, and I was good at a lot of sports, and I didn't want to make a fool of myself the first time I played tennis, and I just found a wall. It was the side of a Kroger's grocery store, and just learned to keep the ball in play on the wall and not hit it on the roof, and then I had a goal. I really didn't know how to hold the racket. I'd watch Labor play on Monday nights on the educational channel. You could see the pros play every now and then, and I saw Labor play and kind of watched the way he held the racket and kind of mimicked that a little bit. Of course, he's a lefty and I'm not, but I had no lessons and no coaches. All I thought about was being consistent. And I've always told kids, I said, if you skip that step, if you don't begin with consistency, you will lose to players of a lesser ability just because they are consistent. And so that has to be a foundation of your game is first become consistent. And then you can learn the fundamentals to make you more consistent. And then you can learn the placement with your new fundamentals should help you placing the ball in different areas. And then you can learn about spin and how that controls the ball going through the air, and then how you can control the environment with spin a lot of times. The wind doesn't bother you as much and all those things. And then you can hit the ball deep and short on purpose and play different styles of players, and you won't have major weaknesses in your game, but it starts with consistency, and it takes time. I mean, Chuck and I both, Jim, were lucky enough to work with Harry Hopman, and he said for a great player to learn to go from the baseline to the net, it might take 6 years, and that's for the top players to be comfortable getting from the baseline to the net. Well,
it's amazing how many kids
are up these days?
Yeah,
you know?
It's amazing how diverse. I was going to say it's amazing how diverse that backboard is. You know, it's still a great tool today.
Tremendous.
And of course, what's happening is the kids now want to have a, you know, super-duper ball machine that's hitting to them rather than the backboard.
Yeah.
It's always that, you know, teaching values of how tennis is and how you can get them to, you know, be a little more mature than maybe they were a year ago. You know, get into that head game.
Guys, I have an idea. I've thought this about a long, long time. Instead of the dumbing down that we do with high-tech rackets and high-tech equipment making it easier, why don't they have, instead of these big things that make it easy for kids, these big frying pan rackets, why don't we have small wood rackets for kids? and so that the kids have to learn all of the skills before they can ever move on to the next level. Hard to pick up, hard to put down. Easy to pick up, easy to put down. You only use high-tech rackets for maybe club players. The pros aren't going to use; they don't use them. So, Jim, what do you think, man?
Well, you know, obviously the wood racket had characteristics. Besides the small head, it also didn't have the kind of power and lightness that we have. So maybe you're not marketing as an old wood racket, but as a new teaching racket that has some colors to it, but it still has the qualities of an old wood racket. That might be the way to sell it to the younger kids.
You know, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah,
people don't want to go back to wood, but maybe have specifications in the racket that make it hard to do when they start out.
Exactly.
And then the kids strokes. And it would get the dopamine rush going again with the kids. Let me say this. Okay, so last week I'm out on our street, and there's a 10-foot goal out there, and I told the people last week about this. But it was the coolest thing. My son, this guy can be 8-foot or 10-foot, so we're messing around with the 8-foot, and I said, "Now, son, I can't shoot that." And so he's sort of just hanging out, and I said, I put it up to 10 and show him how to do it a little bit with my Indiana background. And then I walk away. He sat there for 30 minutes trying to get it up over the hoop. He shot and he shot and he shot and he shot and he shot. Finally got one up over the hoop. It went in. He goes, Papa, did you see that? Did you see that? With the 8-foot goal, it was like, next, no big deal. And again, maybe that's the whole key. Maybe that's the whole key. You know,
I mean,
what do you say?
They've finished with the ball. The soft ball has been that, but I think it'd be more interesting if the rackets came out with more of a dampened down
feel.
Wow.
We'd have to sell it as the softball thing. People, of course, are slamming it because they think it's just another industry, you know, to bring some money into the whole ball game. It is a great teaching tool. It is absolutely bad the way they mandate it. I have to go back to Craig Jones's thing yesterday. In America, we shouldn't be mandated anything. But hey, maybe we come out with that wooden, or that not a wooden, but a teaching racket, Jim, that could be similar to Blades golf clubs that they have now or something.
You have to include Ed in that too, you know.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course. Ed, any other quick thoughts here? I want to get a couple last things from Jim here before we have to sign off. Any other quick things, Coach Dixon?
Yeah, well,
wonderful.
Thanks for saying those good things, Chuck. I'm just glad to hear from Jim and hear things he's doing and how he's got a great attitude about the youth of today. And I know that's important because sometimes I kind of get jaded about that from all the years coaching.
Yep.
It was it's really great to hear someone who's on the front of the battle like Jim is out there doing it, because he's inspired me. I can't wait to get my next lesson on Saturday morning. I'm going to try some of these little things we're talking about here.
Thanks, Coach.
Jim, thank you, and thanks, Chuck and Jim. Nice to meet you.
Stay on and listen if you want to. I got to click you off here and I go to Jim here. Thanks, Coach Dixon. Really, really appreciate Coach Ed Dixon, and he's been doing this for 40 years. Harry Hopman, what an inspiration. Get to work with that man side by side all those years. And Jim, we got about 5 minutes here. I wanted to ask you just a couple more things, okay? If you were in charge of everything, here's what I love about you. You're a very, you know, deep and thoughtful man who really thinks through things that you say. And you know, I've been accused. I say them first, and then I, you know, as they come to my head, my wife says, and that's the way the good Lord wired us.
Yeah, you got to have the big spirit.
But Jim, if you were in charge of the whole ball of wax, tell us three things you would do as the czar of American tennis to get us on track. Yeah, all of
them. I had a thought the other day, and it's not necessarily the reinventing the wheel, but the Mats Wilander is running around with these his little van, and he goes around, and he really gives quite a lovely show. Did you have him on your show?
We did. We had him on our show back. Let's see. It was right before Thanksgiving, November 22nd in 2011. So, or 2000, excuse me, last year, 2012. 2012, right before Thanksgiving. But the Wielander on wheels. He goes around. He came to College Park 3-4 times. Yep.
And he goes out, tries to bring, you know, his celebrity to, you know, an enthusiastic group of people. And, you know, it works on an adult level, probably more than it works on a junior level, because he's just trying to entertain. But I was thinking, doesn't the USTA or somebody, the ITF or somebody, get to where they're sending out a little scouting party for some of these, you know, they do it in regional centers, but there's nobody going out looking for it, like the old days in baseball where they had scouts go out to colleges and high schools and look at these kids who are playing and maybe figure out a way to visit, you know, the most fruitful areas, obviously. But well, that would be kind of a fun thing, because then the kids could look forward to that van maybe showing up in their neighborhood, or, you know, a whole program.
That's a brilliant idea.
You know, getting some of that going. And then the other thing, you know, it's so important, and you and I are both on the same page here, is the history of the sport. You know, for years I'd talk to kids about, you know, who's the only player who's done this, or can you name a top player or name the Grand Slams, you know, and they just hardly can do it. I think it's so important, as I've been involved in history of tennis over the years, you know, is to get some of that, you know, spruced up, polished up a little bit, and see if we can get it out of the new ports a little bit and get it into the mainstream a little more. You know, I'm not sure how they do it. You know, golf does a beautiful job of it with their events when they televise it. And I think tennis is trying, but I just don't think they make it as interesting enough to the 10-year-olds, the 14-year-olds. You know, I'm just down here in Charleston with you recently, and welcome to the area. I know we both love it. And Charleston would be a perfect town to have a little tennis museum to, you know, just get the kids who are there looking at some old boring house somewhere to come and see a tennis museum. It would be a real exciting sort of piece of history that they'd be able to take with them, and then they'd begin to appreciate some of the, you know, some of the foundations of the sport. You know, the third thing, I don't know, is three is a lot to come up with to change the wheel. But, you know, probably, you know, trying to find a way to keep it above all the other sports. You know, we do a pretty good job of the image of tennis. I know, you know, you got cycling where the, you know, you got the Lance Armstrong issue, and you've got some football issues with crime and stuff. And, you know, it's a pretty lovely sport we have. And you don't want to make it too country clubby, but at the same time, it is the best sport in the world right now. And we've got to be sure we keep it above all the others with, you know, that shining example of life lessons, life values, and good sportsmanship, and all those kind of things that make it worth the getting up every day.
Jim, those are fantastic. I mean, the Wielander on wheels thing is brilliant. You know, I've been traveling, doing my camps in some of the different towns. I've been to Sumter, South Carolina, Lexington, South Carolina, different places. I went up to little town Landrum, South Carolina this summer. But it's sort of like the circus comes to town, and then people get excited about it. And that is a huge thing. That is a brilliant idea. I mean, that we need to pass on to the USTA and other people. I'm going to do that. The history of the sport, some Clarence Mabry tried some years back with tennis cards and everything, but you're exactly right. In golf, we really, really do teach people about the heritage and the history so that they believe they're part of something big, and that does keep it classy. But we've only got a second here. You know, Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You know, you really, really have touched a lot of lives. And, you know, I just want to thank you very, very much for coming on, and I think people will get a lot from this show. You know,
made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Never buy a tattoo on his Simpsons. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Mind. reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. Thanks, Jim McCready. We really, really appreciate you being on the show. God bless you and your family. Thank you for
being on
today.
Yep.
Folks, that's it. We'll talk to you again next week, American Tennis at noon Eastern Time on the UR Tennis Network. God bless each and every one of you, and take care of that circle of influence right in front of you, regardless of the circle of concern. God bless you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.